This is the conspiracy guy. Before I turn to the shooting in Washington, D.C., let me begin with Jeff Sessions' testimony to Congress. I watched the entire event live. I watched follow-up interviews. I thought he did a commendable job. He offered an indignant defense, as the New York Times reports, against what he called an appalling and detestable lie that he may have colluded with the Russian effort to interfere in the 2016 election. But he declined during an often contentious Senate hearing to answer central questions about his or President Trump's conduct. I didn't see it. They kept pressing him as to appealing for executive privilege. They were trying to manipulate the situation to create parallels with Watergate. The politics here are blatant and obvious to anyone paying even remote attention. We have the bizarre editorial in USA Today. Jeff Sessions' testimony was unconvincing. Attorney General seems to regard his main client as Trump, not the American people. Our view. Tuesday's much-anticipated testimony by Attorney General Jeff Sessions before a Senate panel investigating Russian interference in the 2016 campaign lacked the high drama of James Comey's appearance last week. In nearly 3 hours of questioning, Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee failed to land any knockout blows, nor did Sessions punch any meaningful holes in Comey's damaging testimony about President Trump. The Attorney General, a Trump loyalist during the campaign who formally recused himself from the Russian inquiry in March, forcefully defended himself against suggestions that he colluded with the Russians last year, calling it secret innuendo and an appalling and detestable lie. But Sessions often came across as forgetful, testy, and defensive. His testimony sprinkled with the I do not recalls it reeked of the lawyerly way public officials often evade accusations in Washington. And if Republicans were looking for Sessions to undercut Comey's powerful testimony on the key issues, that the president asked Comey to end a criminal investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, they were surely disappointed. Only around the edges did Sessions disagree with Comey's, they call it, compelling account. More to come. We have the appalling publication of a full-page ad on page 7 of the New York Times. The Russians are here, with a Russian flag draped over the Washington Monument. It turns out it's also run in the Los Angeles Times and the Washington Post. Talk of the Russians have been flooding television news for months and months. Investigation on Capitol Hill, undisclosed meetings with Russian officials, and talk of collusion made Thursday's televised testimony by former FBI Director James Comey one of the most watched events of the week. And now Deadline has pointed out a full-page ad running in today's New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and Washington Post, claiming simply, "The Russians are here," and dramatically showing a Russian flag draped over the Washington Monument. Is this some political statement, a message reminding us that all of our intelligence agencies believe the Russians actively interfered in the U.S. election in 2016? Which all by itself is a falsehood. It's not true that all 17 U.S. intel agencies concurred in Russian involvement. Does anyone think the Coast Guard, for example, had an opinion on the matter? It was the three major, the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI, that have supported this view, for which, alas, there is no support, no evidence whatsoever, and it's becoming increasingly embarrassing as the media continues to tout where the biggest false flag operation since 9/11 is happening right now. Check it out online. There's a very nice statement about Comey's testimony talking about Russian intervention again and again and again. This is just a manifest absurdity. If anyone wants to know why the United States is becoming a laughingstock in the eyes of the world, it's because the media is pursuing a will-o'-the-wisp. It's on a wild goose chase. As I published in Town Hall in response to a commentary on the pros and cons of Comey's testimony. Let's see. Vladimir Putin has denied there was any Russian hacking. Julian Assange and Craig Murray both know the leaker and have asserting it was not Russian. Seth Rich appears to have been killed for leaking the DNC emails to Julian Assange. Julian has offered $20,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of whoever was responsible for his death. A fourth-year surgery resident at Washington Hospital Center has reported he was alive and well when they treated him, but 8 hours after his arrival, law enforcement officials swarmed the hospital and put him off limits. He had been expected to survive, but expired after their arrival. The investigation of the murder has been stopped by the D.C. federal attorney, who is a brother of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The body of the prosecutor pursuing the case washed up on a Florida beach in her district, not far from the residence of the judge involved in the case. But Town Hall won't even allow a post that exposes the whole Russian hacking meme was made up by John Podesta and Robbie Mook within 24 hours of Hillary's concession speech, as the book Shattered reports. Shame on the fake news media, where I'm alluding to my first post on the matter, making those key points about the whole Russian hacking meme having been made up out of whole cloth by John Podesta and Robbie Mook, which was up for less than 5 minutes and taken down. Frankly, when I go back for this, I cannot find this comment either, although it had at least 6 likes. Moreover, Oliver Stone was Monday night on the Late Show with Stephen Colbert on CBS and had a huge argument, a political brawl that was painful to watch. The Oscar-winning Stone appeared on the show to promote his latest documentary, The Putin Interviews. He was granted unprecedented access to both Putin's professional and personal worlds and interviewed the Russian leader more than a dozen times over the course of 2 years, most recently in February, following the U.S. presidential election. But evidently, Stephen Colbert couldn't handle the truth, where Oliver Stone told him Israel had more influence than Russia on the 2016 election, which anyone who's reviewed the bidding would know to be true with a certainty, with a certainty. It was Cynthia McKinney who revealed about 2 years ago that when a new member of Congress arrives in Washington or has to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States, where those who do not, as she did not, find themselves confronted with a well-financed alternative candidate or even that their district has been redrawn, she survived both. But that's an atypical case, went on to serve 8 terms. She's a magnificent human being. She would substantiate what Oliver Stone told Stephen Colbert, who used to serve a useful function when he had his show, The Colbert Report, which was fascinating. I used to watch and enjoy a lot, but now he's sunk into the quagmire of mainstream media, disinformation artist par excellence. Turning now to the shooting, breaking: House Whip Scalise, security detail shot at baseball practice, suspect in custody. A gunman opened fire on a group of congressional Republicans practicing baseball in Alexandria Wednesday morning, wounding a senior GOP lawmaker and multiple other people. Representative Steve Scalise, Louisiana Republican, was shot in the hip. Several Capitol Police officers were also said to be victims. Mr. Scalise, as a House Majority Whip, has protection by U.S. Capitol Police, which was a good thing. The gunman, armed with a rifle, was reportedly shot by a member of Mr. Scalise's security detail who had been hit before returning fire. Alexandria Police Chief Michael Brown confirmed 5 people had been taken to the hospital, but would divulge no other details, calling the baseball field an active crime scene. Witnesses said that in addition to Mr. Scalise, 1 staffer and 2 police were shot. They described between 50 and 100 shots fired during a raging gun battle that must have spanned minutes, with Mr. Scalise lying near second base, pinned down by the gunfire, nobody able to reach him. Some lawmakers, including Rand Paul, it appears, sheltered in a dugout while others ran from the field. Now, there are several indications that this is a bona fide event, that there's no false flag aspect to it. Turns out this guy was middle-aged. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter. He'd worked as a volunteer. He believes in gun control. I mean, think about the irony here. So I guarantee this story is going to fade. Within 2 days, you're not going to hear any more about it. However, it ought to lead to the promotion of concealed carry in Washington, D.C. So many of these offenses occur in gun-free zones. It's fortuitous that there were security for Mr. Scalise who were able to return fire. The situation is getting completely out of hand for many reasons, including the paranoia over Russian intervention in our election process, which NBC and CNN have been fanning the flames like a wildfire, even though it has no foundation, no basis whatsoever. Not only that, we're having absurdities such as Shakespeare in the Park featuring a Trump-like Julius Caesar and right-wing media freaking out. The outrage forced corporate sponsors to pull out, but it misses the point of the play, according to the New York Times. For its annual Shakespeare in the Park program, New York City's Public Theater has mounted a production of William Shakespeare's 1599 play, Julius Caesar, in Central Park, a play that, among other things, strongly warns those who commit political violence, even in the service of their country, about the futility of their actions. Well, I don't know. Speak to the supporters of JFK or Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, where their assassination decapitated the liberal movement in the United States, and its consequences have endured for decades. The production began previews on May 23rd. Its opening night is Monday, June 12th, but over the weekend it was met with conservative outrage, followed by the cancellation of two corporate sponsorships. It all comes down to one key creative decision, namely portraying Julius Caesar as Donald Trump. As a result, Julius Caesar has been drawn into the perpetual outrage machine that powers modern American political media. Right-wing outlets such as Breitbart and Fox News have expressed horror over the public theater's particular staging of the play, in which a blonde, coif politician who resembles the U.S. president, he tweets from a golden bathtub and wears a red tie, and his wife has a Slavic accent, is assassinated in Act 3 beneath an American flag, by a cast that includes women and minorities. Though the play, being more than 400 years old, never mentions Trump's name, the resemblance was noted by critics who are present at the show's previews, and their reviews are picked up by the broader conservative media. Well, every American ought to be incensed. This kind of promotion of the assassination of President of the United States is inexcusable. There's no justification for it. Consider, for example, this had been portrayed as the assassination of Barack Obama, and what the outrage would be. There would be no end of it coming from MSNBC, CNN, and a host of the major networks. Or Kathy Griffin poses with Donald Trump's severed head, which is a bad idea on several levels. According to Browbeat, Slate's culture blog, Kathy Griffin is posed for a photo with a replica of the bloodied severed head of Donald Trump. Just substitute the bloodied severed head of Barack Obama. Think about it. The discourse, the level of political discourse in this country has fallen below the corrupt and unethical into the totally immoral, totally disgraceful, partisan without any restraint whatsoever. This is complete and utter political garbage. I won't even sanctify it by saying it's garbage. It's garbage, complete and utter garbage. If we turn to Robert Mueller, who many thought was going to be a decent, objective guy in investigating the alleged Russia connection, reputed Trump confidant and Newsmax CEO Chris Ruddy told PBS News' Judy Woodruff on Monday that President Donald Trump is considering dismissing special counsel Robert Mueller, according to a tweet by Woodruff, which appears to be fake news. What is not fake news is that Mueller has hired a Clinton Foundation lawyer for the Russia probe. The news comes on the eve of Attorney General Jeff Sessions testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the Russia investigation. This follows a hearing featuring the testimony of fired FBI Director James Comey before the same body. Mueller, who on his appointment by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein took independent control of the investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 elections, had a shadow cast on his impartiality when Comey, a one-time mentee of Mueller's, who succeeded him at the Bureau, revealed under oath that he deliberately leaked a potentially privileged memo to the press specifically to ensure the appointment of a special counsel. The ploy worked. Rosenstein, who was handling the investigation because Sessions had already recused himself based on his involvement in the 2016 Trump presidential campaign, came under immense political pressure to appoint a special counsel. Mueller was quickly applauded as an impartial choice by voices across the political spectrum. Since his appointment, he has made signals as to the criminal nature of his investigation, hiring Andrew Weissman, the former head of the Department of Justice Criminal Division's Fraud Section, and former Deputy Solicitor General Michael Drebin. Since his appointment, he's made signals. A more controversial pick of Mueller's was former prosecutor and Wilmer Hale partner Janine Rhee. In 2015, according to Politico, she performed work for the Clinton Foundation, defending it from FOIA requests related to Hillary Clinton's private email server. These developments have raised some red flags on the right. For example, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich told Fox News, "This is going to be a witch hunt." Joining the chorus was Americans for Limited Government President Rick Manning, suggesting Mueller's role should be curtailed, if not eliminated, in a prepared statement he wrote. Given former FBI Director James Comey's testimony that there is no collusion between President Trump and Russia to do with the campaign, the scope of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation should be dramatically narrowed by Attorney General Jeff Sessions to simply the leaks in the Obama administration unmasking, which led to this witch hunt in the first place. If Mueller refuses to investigate these leaks, which are one of the central reasons he was even appointed as special counsel, then the special counsel should be discontinued. It's not up to the Justice Department to choose who the president of the United States is. The American people already made that decision in 2016. Mueller, I would remind you, who served as the sixth director of the FBI from 4 September 2001 to 4 September 2013. During his tenure as director, we had the orchestrated events of 9/11, which he participated in covering up. We had, before he departed, the Boston bombing, which is perhaps the most obvious false flag of them all, and the events at Sandy Hook, to which I shall return, but where the evidence is overwhelming that the school was closed by 2008 because it would have required extensive remodeling to upgrade in conformity with American for Disability Act requirements, prohibitively expensive, so it was simply abandoned. Anyone who wants to get an introduction to these, check out my latest on 9/11. Which you can find on Gary King YouTube channel. They seem to be suppressing it, 9/11, who was responsible and why, but it's with a slightly different title at Gary King YouTube channel, 2 hours covering the entire scope of 9/11 with the latest research, where I've been involved in this profoundly since 2005 when I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth. I've been flown around the world to give presentations to Buenos Aires twice, the second time to serve as a keynote speaker on an international symposium on 9/11 Truth and Justice, to Athens, Greece, all expense paid, with my wife, to appear on what turned out to be a 3.5-hour television program broadcast worldwide by satellite international symposium in London at Friends in 2010, to the Vancouver hearings in 2012. I've done the research. I collaborate with the best people. If you want to know about 9/11, check it out there. For an elementary introduction to Sandy Hook, try the real deal must-see Sandy Hook update on the Boston bombing, the real deal must-see Boston bombing update. You need to be informed. Further developments. Trump's lawyers say Comey leaked information for months. The liberals, who believe that former FBI head James Comey somehow tried to influence the election in Donald Trump's favor, should have had those beliefs destroyed during his testimony last week. There was plenty we learned about Comey in his own words, and it was clear that he had a staunch distrust of Trump, going so far as to say that he took extensive notes of his conversation with Trump because he didn't trust him. Comey took no such notes during his meetings with Barack Obama or during the three-hour meetings he had with Hillary at her house the weekend before the FBI let her off the hook, which I find profoundly disturbing. This is a very methodical, systematic man, and he regularly made it the practice to take extensive notes in the immediate aftermath of these meetings. He would not wait. He would not delay. And that's therefore going to become a cause of concern about the integrity of James Comey. Most shocking of all, we learned it was Comey himself who leaked the memo of his claiming that Trump had requested that the FBI's investigation into Michael Flynn be dropped. The claim wasn't true, and if he wanted to, Trump could just have granted Flynn a pardon anyway. There'd be no point in asking Comey to end the case. Well, here we have a professor who is Jonathan Turley, who's a simply excellent guy. Former professor, Comey's leaking of memos could land him in legal hot water. Former FBI Director James Comey admitted Thursday at a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing that he leaked memos about his meetings with President Donald Trump through a third party to the media, and lawyers now question the legality of that release. Mark Cassowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer, told reporters Thursday that Comey admitted to unauthorized disclosures of privileged information and would let the appropriate authorities determine whether an investigation should happen. Although Mr. Comey testified he only leaked the memos in response to a tweet, the public record reveals that the New York Times was quoting from these memos the day before the referenced tweet, which belies Mr. Comey's excuse for the unauthorized disclosure of privileged information and appears to be entirely retaliatory, Cassowitz said. George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley stated on his website that although the memos were created by Comey, the former FBI director would likely have to follow federal non-disclosure laws of classified and unclassified information. Turley writes, "Besides being subject to non-disclosure agreements, Comey falls under federal laws governing the disclosure of classified and non-classified information. Assuming that the memos were not classified, though it seems odd that it would not be classified, even on the confidential level, there is 18 U.S. Code 641, which makes it a crime to steal, sell, or convey any record, voucher, money, or thing of value of the United States or of any department or agency thereof." Additionally, Turley notes that Comey created the memos on a government computer so the memos could be classified as government documents and not something he owns. The problem is that Comey's description of his use of an FBI computer to create memoranda to file suggests that these are arguably government documents. Comey admitted that he thought he raised the issue with his staff and recognized that they might be needed by the department or Congress. They read like a type of Field 302 form, which are core investigatory documents, he said. Leaking the documents places Comey into a legal box, Turley explains, as the FBI restricts using material to harm a former represented person or individual or firm related to prior representation. And the FBI website specifically states, quote, "Dissemination of FBI information is made strictly in accordance with provisions of the Privacy Act, Title V, United States Code, Section 552A, FBI policy and procedures regarding discretionary release of information in accordance with the Privacy Act and other applicable federal orders and directives." It appears to me that there is warrant for Trump's lawyer calling for an investigation of Comey for leaking privileged communication. President Donald Trump's personal lawyer, Mark Cassowitz, has called for the former FBI Director James Comey to be investigated after Comey testified in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee about his abrupt firing by Trump. And that includes, as a good friend of mine pointed out, that given Comey's methodical way of keeping memoranda, it's ridiculous to believe what he testified to Congress, namely he woke up in the middle of a night in a dead sweat, realizing he ought to have made a memorandum of that meeting with Trump, which I have no doubt he had made at the time contemporaneously, which means that Comey has also committed perjury. This man is a disreputable human being. We continue to find more developments that are profoundly disturbing, where we have a report that three attorneys have been found dead in Wasserman Schultz, Florida district in 2 weeks, fearing for his life as colleagues and attorneys dropped dead around him. DNC fraud lawsuit attorney seeks protection order from the court, citing dead lawyers Seth Rich's unsolved murder and Sean Lucas's untimely death. Three high-profile attorneys have been found dead in Debbie Wasserman's Florida district within the last 2 weeks, prompting the plaintiff in the massive DNC fraud lawsuit being held in Florida to request protection from the court for the plaintiffs, their witnesses, and families. But that does not appear to be strictly true with regard to the time interval. In support of this motion, we have cited the following events: the untimely death of our process server, Sean Lucas, the unsolved murder of DNC employee Seth Rich. We believe Mr. Rich might have been a potential witness in this case. We have also cited the recent untimely death of federal prosecutor Barrington Wisnot in South Florida. Also, recent bizarre and disturbing conduct, including threats, have been directed at plaintiffs, their counsel, and employees. We have also cited an offer to provide security by the Oath Keepers and its president, Stuart Rose. The motion published on the Beck website, Jampack, includes the declaration of a plaintiff in the suit alleging allegations that her laptop had been tampered with, allegedly by an individual who had illegally entered her home. We bear in mind that there have been numerous murders, too many in my opinion, involved with this suit, including beyond Seth Rich, WikiLeaks attorney John Jones run over by subway on April 8th, UN President John Ashdine on June 22nd, 2 days before he was supposed to testify about Clinton Foundation money laundering, 48-year-old Mike Flynn, an investigative reporter, died on June 23rd, the same day Flynn published a report about the Clinton Foundation's shady dealings in communist China. 47-year-old John Montano, Tim Kaine's aide and DNC staffer, died of a heart attack the day the DNC convention started as he was packing his bags to leave. Montano's family said he was in tip-top shape. Investigative journalist Victor Thorne, who wrote 4 books on the Clinton crime family, was found shot dead. He stated on talk radio earlier in the year, "If I'm ever found dead, it was not suicide. I would never kill myself." His death, however, was ruled a suicide. 38-year-old Sean Lucas served the DNC with a lawsuit and then died immediately after. He was suing the DNC for stealing the nomination from Bernie Sanders, found dead with a deadly mix of pills and herbs in his system, even though his friends and family say he was not a drug dealer. We also have now Chris Cornell was about to expose the elite pedophilia ring before he died. A late rock star was going to reveal high-level pedogate info. As the world still mourns the loss of legendary auto slave and Soundgarden frontman Chris Cornell, more information begins to emerge that adds further speculation about his suspicious premature death. Rockstar Cornell worked closely with various foundations to help and protect children from pedophilia and child trafficking. Speaking to TMD, a source close to Cornell has come forward claiming that he had uncovered evidence of a cocaine and child trafficking ring in Mena, Arkansas, that was tied to Bill and Hillary Clinton. Imagine that. And, of course, we also have the report: Seth Rich's murder investigation shut down by Wasserman Schultz's brother, who's a federal district attorney for D.C., in an amazing conflict of interest. Steve Wasserman, a federal district attorney for the District of Columbia, shut down the Seth Rich murder investigation. Gee, I guess there's nothing to see here. Let's just move along.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
That's what we were told. Most Americans never believed Lee Oswald was the lone gunman, for excellent reasons. In fact, there were at least 6 shooters who fired from 8 to 10 shots or more who are identified here. We have, finally, the solution to the greatest murder mystery in history, laid out for the world to see, proof after proof after proof. Photos were faked, the body was changed, x-rays were altered, the home movies were fixed. 15 experts contribute to a 529-page book with 1,037 photos and diagrams in black and white and color at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com. Other stories of great interest include that NBC's Megyn Kelly interview with Alex Jones is shaping up to be a disaster. The sit-down format was a poor choice for a segment on the InfoWars conspiracy theorist. I mean, Megyn started off strong with her interview with Vladimir Putin, which, by the way, NBC edited, because although Megyn confronted Putin about Russian involvement in American elections, which he categorically denied for good reason, it didn't happen. He also pointed out that the U.S. regularly intervenes in the elections in other countries. NBC edited it out. The recent article by Roger Stone at stonecoldtruth.com on the CIA's legacy of lies included an ample sampling of over 80 coups that have been perpetrated by the CIA against nations around the world, beginning with the 1953 coup in Iran that took out the democratically elected government and replaced it with a tyrannical Shah who initiated a reign of terror that persisted until 1979 when the popular uprising restored the Islamic Republic, taking control of the hostages, where William Casey negotiated on behalf of Ronald Reagan a deal that they not be released until after the inauguration in order to make sure Jimmy Carter would not be reelected in the euphoria that would have followed their release. This, interestingly, is a case where, as Alan Dershowitz has observed, there was no statute then against Reagan and Casey engaging the Iranians in efforts to assist Ronald Reagan's election. And had Donald Trump elicited assistance from Russia in relation to his election, there's no statute against that even today. So the situation is highly selective here, where those who are attempting to impugn Trump are willing to make up anything, even ignoring, for example, that the parallel to Trump's firing of the director of the FBI is not Watergate, where Richard Nixon was withholding evidence that had been subpoenaed by Archibald Cox, a special prosecutor, where Nixon directed the Attorney General, Elliot Richards, to fire him, but Richards declined and resigned, where then William Ruckelshaus, his deputy, was sent into acting attorney general. Nixon demanded he fire. Ruckelshaus likewise declined and resigned, where only when Robert Bork, solicitor general number 3, moved up to acting attorney general did he have success in finding an attorney general acting to fire Archibald Cox. That was a very serious matter. There are lots of reasons to believe that Comey has acted in a disreputable fashion, that he's been leaking right along regularly, that he has committed perjury before the Congress, and that he's a despicable man. Even former assistant directors to the FBI have concurred. They believe he was fired for just cause. The parallels with Watergate, therefore, have no basis. They're a faulty analogy which occurs when there are more differences than similarities, few but crucial differences, or the analogies are taken to be conclusive. The more interesting case would be that Bill Clinton fired then Attorney General William Sessions as his FBI director the day before the body of Vince Foster was found, and I surmise that was to put the FBI into a state of disarray so it would be unable to appropriately investigate the death of a man who'd been shot twice in the head, who'd rolled himself up in a carpet and deposited his body at a federal park. I mean, talk about your disgraceful conduct. The Clinton death list is unending, it appears. And those surrounding the DNC are far-reaching and vast. When are the American people going to rise up in disgust at all of these murders and sabotage of democracy by Hillary Clinton and Bill to benefit themselves? Conspiracy theorist Vox continues. Conspiracy theorist Alex Jones has spent years trying to convince people that the parents of slain children at Sandy Hook Elementary School are liars. Now, freshly minted NBC host Megyn Kelly, formerly of Fox News, is giving him a mega platform to cast his doubt on them once again in one of the first sit-down interviews of her new Sunday night show. After a teaser for the show, which will air this Sunday, was released, Kelly was blasted on Twitter for giving Jones airtime, with calls for a boycott to support the Sandy Hook parents. Advertisers have subsequently pulled ads from NBC, and Kelly was dropped as the host for a Sandy Hook fundraiser. In the preview, Kelly attempts to be tough with Jones and accuses him of dodging her questions. She says she interviewed him to shine a light on an increasingly important media figure. An NBC executive also defended the program, saying there was value in having Jones sit down for an interview. Sandy Hook families, this is a leading story on Yahoo News in the last couple of days. Sandy Hook families denounce NBC over Alex Jones' interview. NBC is planning to air Megyn Kelly's interview with conspiracy theorist and talk show host Alex Jones on Sunday night. And the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook massacre are outraged, given Jones' repeated suggestions that the mass shooting was staged. Kelly confronted Jones about his Sandy Hook claims during the interview, but the victims' families argued that NBC should not be giving the Infowars.com provocateur a platform. Megyn Kelly calls Alex Jones' Sandy Hook theory revolting in new statements. Megyn Kelly released a new statement on Tuesday in response to the backlash she received for interviewing Sandy Hook conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. "I understand and respect the decision of the event organizers," this is to the Sandy Hook Promise people, "but I'm of course disappointed that I won't be there to support them on Wednesday night. I find Alex Jones' suggestion that Sandy Hook was a hoax as personally revolting as every other rational person does. It left me and many other Americans asking the very question that prompted this interview. How does Jones, who traffics in these outrageous conspiracy theories, have the respect of the President of the United States and a growing audience of millions? President Trump, by praising and citing him, appearing on his show and giving him White House press credentials, has helped elevate Jones to the alarm of many. Our goal in sitting down with him was to shine a light, as journalists are supposed to do, on this influential figure, and yes, to discuss the considerable falsehoods he's promoted with near impunity." But that takes for granted, begs the question of what happened at Sandy Hook. Megyn Kelly, who, to the best of my knowledge, has never investigated the case, knows virtually nothing about it, has obviously never read Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which I released for free as a PDF, which anyone can download from the internet. Just enter Nobody Died at Sandy Hook and take the rents.com version, which is complete. There's another there that seems to be missing the front pages. I released it for free after Amazon.com had banned the book when it had been on sale for less than a month. It was produced by CreateSpace, a subsidiary of Amazon.com, went on sale on 22 October 2015, had sold nearly 500 copies when it was banned on the 19th of November for no good reason whatsoever. This appears to have been a purely political decision. Jay Carney, who had been a White House spokesman, had gone to Amazon.com as a vice president. He and Jeff Bezos apparently decided it was too hot, blowing the case apart in so many directions. Now here we have a response further. "As predicted, Alex Jones shows his ugly COINTEL head, part of the program demonizing truthers via Sandy Hook." This is where the report from an alternative point of view is that Alex Jones is actually selling out the Sandy Hook truth movement. "Been warning about this all along. Megyn Kelly's show will be a Sandy Hook hit piece, labeling all truthers as dead children stalkers on Father's Day. Alex Jones was a suspect, slimy character since before he became ill-famed and completely racist and bigoted and pro-NWO and much of its agenda, only differing on who should be in control. That is, not only the Khazarian Mafia, but it should be a shared mission between radical white supremacists allied with radical Zionists. I've been listening to him, had been for more than 10 years, before I came to realize he was slowly and then more radically modifying his sheep's clothing. The reason appears to be twofold. Alex Jones has now demanded Megyn Kelly interview be canceled. She lied to me. Jones called for cancellation after excerpt showing him calling 9/11 attacks an inside job and appear to question Sandy Hook shootings. Because according to Alex, and I watched him say this, he now believes that the children were killed. He does believe that the children were killed, which is a manifest absurdity. None of the children were killed. None of them died there. And therefore that he's being misrepresented by Megyn Kelly. But it does appear that his views have evolved and that at one point in time he was endorsing the view that nobody died at Sandy Hook, which is provable, has been proven. I can give you link after link after link. In fact, I wrote to NBC feedback on the NBC programming Sunday night with Megyn Kelly. I have a news story or tip. And I gave my email address, confirmed my email address, and noted, I edited Nobody Died at Sandy Hook 2015. The school was closed by 2008. They faked the kids. Sandy Hook charade. Noah Posner was Michael Vabner as a child. I gave the link. Here's a link to the PDF of the book. It was a two-day FEMA drill. I included the manual in the book. Sandy Hook, starring Wayne Carver as the medical examiner, a nice YouTube that lays it all out. And, of course, the book is completely devastating, which is why they had to ban it. Proof that it was a drill was right before our eyes. The portable sign, everyone must check in. Boxes of bottled water and pizza cartons at the firehouse. Porta-potties already present from scratch. Many wearing name tags on lanyards. Parents bringing children to the scene. It turns out all these features were present on the 13th, the day of the rehearsal, according to the FEMA manual. And in fact, it states in the manual to explain the sign that everyone must check in. FEMA exercises provide restrooms and refreshments, which explains the bottled water, pizza cartons, porta potties already in place. When Wolfgang Halbig sought to elicit Freedom of Information Act information about who provided the porta potties, it was refused. Wolfgang was simply trying to find out what had happened at Sandy Hook so that in his role as a national school safety expert, he could advise other school districts how to avoid what happened at Sandy Hook. But it's become clear now that he was refused because it would have revealed that the porta potties were delivered the day before on the 13th rather than the day of the purported shooting, the 14th, and blown the whole case. Wolfgang has been very dogged and even discovered under sworn testimony from the first select man of Newtown, which is equivalent to the mayor, a woman, Patricia LaLorda, that the city had not provided the everyone must check in sign, but rather under oath she testified it was put there by Homeland Security. What in the world would Homeland Security have been doing there in the first place? In addition, we have ample proof it wasn't a school massacre. No surge of EMTs into the building. No medevac helicopter was called. No string of ambulances to the school to rush the little bodies off to hospitals where they could be declared to be dead or alive. No evacuation of 469 other students, which according to the official report on Sandy Hook conducted by Connecticut State's Attorney Steven Sadensky, which he took over a year to compose, which is very odd, but he appears to have been awaiting the possible emergence of evidence he'd have to accommodate. There were 489 students there that day. That so you subtract 20, you had 469 that needed evacuation. When you go to dash cam footage for the specific places and locations where the evacuation was supposed to be taking place, we find nothing there. You've been told you can't prove a negative, but you can prove the negative that there's no elephant in your living room by going there and looking for signs of the presence of elephant, finding none, you're entitled to infer. That's because there's no elephant there. When we go to the location and times where the evacuation is supposed to be taking place and we find it's not taking place, you're entitled to infer that's because no evacuation was taking place. They didn't even put any bodies on the triage tarps. The whole identification was done using photographs, and we've now been able to prove that they created the children who were the alleged deceased using photographs of other children when they were 10 years older now, when they were 10 years younger. We have proven it especially notably in the case of Noah Posner, who's the most unusual little boy, because he not only died at Sandy Hook on 14 December 2012, but again in Pakistan on 16 December 2014, Kelly Watt, who has her own commercial and home cleaning service, had over 100 hours of conversation with Lenny, told him she didn't believe a word he said, didn't believe he had a child, didn't believe he died there, asked for a birth certificate, a death certificate. Lenny inadvisedly, no doubt, sent her a copy of a death certificate for Noah Posner that turned out to be a fabrication. It was the bottom half of a real death certificate combined with the top half of a fake, which, of course, would have been totally unnecessary had Noah actually died there. It had no file number. It had the wrong estimated time of death at 11 a.m. when the shooting took place between 9:30 and 9:35. In addition, Kelly noticed there was a striking resemblance between the photos of Noah at the age of about six and his older stepbrother, Michael Vabner, and showed the photographs of the two to many of her friends, and they said, yeah, those are the same. This is him as a child, or this is him when he's grown up. So I gathered in collaborative research about six of us to work on this problem. We discovered they have the same eyes. We discovered they have the same ears. We discovered that they have the same eyebrows. Larry Rivera, who's done absolutely brilliant work identifying the man in the doorway as Lee Oswald, creating GIFs that feed in photographs of Lee Oswald into the image we have of the doorman and feed in images of Billy Lovelady, the alternative the government claims was the case, into the image of doorway, showing that with Oswald Fitz's hand in glove, with Billy, the ears are wrong, the chin is wrong, the nose is wrong. But it turns out that when you feed the features of Billy into the man standing beside Oswald in the doorway, who has his arms upraised to protect his eyes from the fun, it's a perfect fit for Billy Lovelady. And that man is also wearing a short-sleeved shirt, which confirms what Billy did when he went to the FBI on the 29th of February, 1964, to show them the shirt he'd been wearing that day, and they photographed it. It was a short-sleeved, red and white, vertically striped shirt. You can find online, by the way, my latest on JFK, Who Was Responsible and Why, same title. You can find it at the Brian Ruhe, R-U-H-E show, or just using the title, or you can find it at the Gary King YouTube channel. But it integrates all the latest information we have about JFK. The fact is, the parents weren't allowed into the building. They were only shown photograph. That was, of course, deliberate. When the building was torn down, the construction crew was given lifetime gag orders to never talk about anything they saw or did not see inside the building, which would have included no blood on the ground, no pockmarks in the wall. Believe it or not, we have 50 photographs in the book, which you can download for free, of them furnishing an empty home, an empty house to be the Adam Lanza residence. You can tell it's fraudulent because they include his bedroom made up neat, his bedroom made up messy, where they hadn't decided yet which way they were going to make it up, where we have a photograph of the Nancy Lanza bedroom where Adam is alleged to have shot his mother with a .22 caliber rifle. There's some red stuff on the bed, but it isn't blood. It looks to me like it might be raspberry jam. There are some forms on a wooden chest at the foot of the bed because they were keeping records of how they were arranging the rooms in various photographs. And Kelly Watt, with her keen eye and background, with her own home and commercial cleaning service, spotted a blue moving pad beneath the leg of the bed that, in their haste, they had forgotten to remove. We also have 50 photographs of the school being repurposed and set up for going live, including a classic image where the SWAT team is already present. Just above the roof of the vehicle, you can see a string of four windows in classroom 10 that after the event would be shot out, but now here are undamaged. The flag is at full mast. You come down the flagpole, and they're leaning against the wall with his arms folded, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent, is none other than Wayne Carver, a medical examiner. And there's crime scene up for a crime that is yet to be committed. We also include photos of the windows before and after so you can compare them. We even have photos of the perps drilling simulated bullet holes in the window frame of the of classroom 10 to fake the shooting that did not take place. We have another photo with pink rods inserted. You can see they're all exactly parallel to one another, exactly 90 degrees to the window frame. I used to supervise marksmanship training at Edson Range, Camp Pendleton, when I was a series commander at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego with 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command. No one familiar with marksmanship would be taken in by this. It's a complete stunt, completely phony. In this book, we have contributions from from 13, including six current or retired PhD college professors: Vivian Lee, PhD, Sterling Harwood, JD, PhD, Dr. Eilwin, PhD, Nick Kullerstrom, PhD, Dennis Camino, James F. Tracy, PhD, Alan William Powell, Jim Fetzer, PhD, Kelly Watt, and featuring Sophia Smallstorm, Paul Preston, and Wolfgang Halberg, we leave no doubt about it. The Sandy Hook families have been appealing to Trump to help us to stop conspiracy theorists, but the situation is simply absurd. They made out like bandits, dividing among the 26 surviving families between $27 and $130 million. That's over $1 million per family. For their participation, the Newtown School District received a grant of $50 million to build a new elementary school where the old had stood, which is fantastic because I reviewed the cost of an elementary, a kindergarten through fourth grade school, as was Sandy Hook, and found the average cost across the nation is only $7 million. So they got seven times $7 million to build a new school at Sandy Hook. What is this? The Taj Mahal of elementary schools? And even those who participated as in bit roles as players in the background. The police, who were extras on the scene, split over $2 million grant for their pain and suffering for participating in an elaborate hoax. Indeed, we even know that seven Sandy Hook parents had visited the White House before the shooting, three of them on the same day. Two of them were among those who got free homes on Christmas of 2009 when they were creating synthetic families. We know we have cracked this case in so many ways, including that one of the players who was supposed to be a grieving father, David Wheeler, also played the part of a SWAT team member walking up and down Dickinson Drive carrying an automatic weapon upside down by the magazine. Now, if anyone has familiarity with weapons, they understand the absurdity of that. Magazines are designed to be quickly removed and rapidly replaced. Carrying it upside down, you run the probability the weapon's going to be detached from the magazine and crash on the ground and probably be damaged. Yet you have this numbskull walking up and down Dickinson Drive. He's got the same face, the same eyebrows, the same eyes, the same nose, the same mouth, the same shape and size of his skull. There's even the same little mole on his left cheek. I mean, this has been cracked. Check it out, the video, Sandy Hook Sniper, his dad, David Wheeler, where he and his wife, Francine, who just happened to work for the former finance chairman for the Democratic National Committee, were flown by Barack Obama down to Washington, D.C., so they could give a pitch for gun control from the Oval Office, a gesture that heretofore had only been extended to Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States. But that's because this was a Barack Obama special feature, an event orchestrated by Eric Holder. When the governor of the state, Daniel Malloy, gave a talk with the press, with his lieutenant governor at hand about the shooting, he said they had been spoken to that something like this might happen, which got me wondering, something like this, what could he possibly mean? Spoken to by whom? There are only really two alternatives, namely that he had been warned someone might come into a Connecticut public school and shoot it up and kill a lot of kids, in which case he obviously had the obligation to notify the school systems to enhance their security to ensure it did not happen. But that's something he didn't do. Or alternatively, that he'd been informed they were going to take an abandoned school, conduct a drill, present it as a live event in order to promote gun control, which is exactly what happened. And when I looked into the matter, I discovered that Eric Holder had visited with the governor on 27th of November, just a couple of weeks before the event, and appears to be the party by whom he was spoken to. And we have video of Eric Holder addressing a National Democratic Women's Conference in Washington, D.C. in 1995, talking about the necessity to brainwash the American people to change their attitudes about guns. This appears to have been part and parcel of what was taking place. We not only have the photographic record showing that Noah Posner was created out of photographs of Michael Vebner as a child, We have other photographs. There's one you can find in a video online, Sandy Hook kid alive spotted at funeral. We actually have one of the alleged decedents attending his own funeral. I'm looking right now at another photograph where they went way beyond by photoshopping in photos of these kids when they were younger in the foredown, a grouping of four. And then when you look at the background, you see three girls and a boy. When you look at the background, the much older young men and women, the three girls are on the left and the boy is second from the right. I mean, this is rubbing it in our faces. This is how they faked it. You're supposed to believe, oh, they can't be the same because there they are together in the same photograph. But that's the wonder of Sandy Hook, photoshopping. We also have the very interesting event that we have a 27-story skyscraper in London that has been burning and which has not collapsed. And that's, of course, significant because that's what happens when you have an honest-to-God event of a steel structure, concrete high-rise. None in history had collapsed before 9/11. None collapsed during 9/11. None have collapsed after 9/11, where I've also done an extended coverage of 9/11. Which you can also find online. If you go to the Gary King YouTube channel, you can find it there under the heading of Jim Fetzer addresses that fateful day in 2001, because they're going through and they're censoring or suppressing anything about 9/11. I include visions where you see the North Tower, for example, blowing apart from the top down. We know that it was being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. The collapse of the building wasn't even a physical possibility because the top 16 floors represented only 1.4% of the mass of the steel. The idea could overwhelm the lower 98.6 as a manifest absurdity. The building was being converted into very fine dust, which was coating lower Manhattan. The U.S. Geological Survey did a study at 35 locations and discovered elements in whose quantity and correlation was indicative of a nuclear event. We're talking about the use of Davy Crockett warheads from a tactical recoilless rifle, where hundreds of them were given to Israel. They took them back to Israel, refined them, and brought them back to be used to destroy the Twin Towers. Just a brief summary of the elements, which are conclusive. And by the way, there was nothing left in the footprint of either of these buildings. It was a clever design to avoid damaging the bathtub, which, had it been shattered, would have allowed Hudson River water to flood beneath Lower Manhattan, the most valuable real estate in the world. Barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium, barium and strontium. Neither of these elements should ever appear in building debris in these quantities. The levels never fall below 400 parts per million for barium, never fall drop below 700 parts per million for strontium. Reach over 3,000 parts per million for both, and the dust samples taken at Broadway and John Street. Thorium and uranium elements only exist in radioactive form. Thorium is a radioactive element formed by uranium from decay. It's very rare. Should not be present in building rubble ever. So once again, we have verifiable evidence a nuclear fission event has taken place. Also true of lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium. A very rare element, should not be found at concentrations 55 times normal in the basement of WTC-6 no less than 11 days after 9/11, another telltale sign of nukes. In fact, millions of gallons of water had already been broadcast to wash down Ground Zero, which, of course, was most appropriately named. And if you want more, go to Moon Rock Books and check out America Nuked on 9/11, compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. You just might find that something you need to understand. Thank you all very much for listening.